Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 124, recorded on May 10th, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, App Store, iTunes, and all that fun stuff. I'm Michael Johnston, and I'm here, as usual, with Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah. Do we cover the magical iMystery magical device, too?
Oh, I mean, yeah. It goes without saying. We cover that one every week.
Yeah, whenever that comes out, we'll be covering that as well.
Yeah, we will also, just for people who are concerned, we will be covering that thing that Adam said. Jeff Gamet is also here. He's the managing editor of the Mac Observer.
Hey, Michael.
And a very cuddly person as well.
So I've heard.
Yeah. It comes through in the audio.
I'm sure it does.
You got a special mic that captures
the cuddly mic.
Yeah. So we're here talking about iPhones, iPod Touches, iPads, and all that fun stuff. And so the first bit of news to talk about, of course, is iOS 4.3.3 being released.
Apple can't track me anymore.
Yeah. Although I guess that, okay, so for those who didn't listen last week, and if you didn't, you should go back.
And who live in a bubble.
Yes. There was an issue with Apple supposedly being able to track your every move based on...
Because that's what Steve Jobs really wants to know.
He really needs to know that.
Yeah.
So Apple has removed the ability for... we should probably back up, right?
Sure.
So the feature in iOS that was supposedly tracking people's every move was... as it turns out, being used to determine determine your current location whenever you requested it. So it cached the location of nearby Wi-Fi hotspots and cell towers so that your location could be acquired more quickly, right?
Right.
Kind of.
Well, it was also being...
Yeah, so basically, what started this whole fiasco is that... anytime you would, you know, use location, basically, it was discovered that data was being sent back to Apple. And it was like, well, what is this? Everybody wanted to know, what is this data? And the data that Apple says was being sent back was anonymous data of the Wi-Fi hotspots and cell tower locations near you. And so what was happening was that data would get sent up to Apple. And then Apple aggregated that data with data from all kinds of other phones and then sent back a file that was then cached. And that was a certain size file, I guess 2 megabytes was what Apple had decided. And it would send back this cached file of all of the aggregate Wi-Fi hotspots and cell tower locations near you. And then that was the file that was being used to quickly acquire location data when you didn't have GPS available or while it was waiting to acquire the GPS location, which I guess could take up to like 12 minutes. And I've talked to a couple people who have like Garmins and stuff like that, and they've basically confirmed this, that if you have a GPS and you have it powered on and you've had it at a location and then you turn it off and then you go to a completely new location and turn it back on, it can take forever to acquire that. So Apple Sure. wanted to have this local file on the phone that had known locations where it could quickly pick up, you know, a guesstimate of where you were. And that's what was getting cached.
Right. And then so there was a lot of concern about this file that someone discovered a few weeks ago that really looked like it was tracking your every move.
Your every move, yes.
And they actually put out a little application that was able to read the backups of that file that were stored on your computer. This application could read that and then show a time-lapsed overlay on a map
Yeah.
of what looked like your every move. And so, you know, caused a lot of concern.
It looked creepy. I mean, when you ran it, I mean, you could tell, like, I was in the San Francisco area for Macworld in, you know, late January. And you could see a trip that I took over the summer, over in the fall, last fall, to Missouri. So, yeah, it was sort of like, wow, this is, somebody could use this to stalk me.
Sure.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting seeing locations plotted out for me in, outside Oakland in the Bay in California. And that would be from Macworld Expo this last year, where I was lucky enough to get to go on a helicopter ride.
Oh, cool. I didn't know about that.
That was really cool. So thank you, Jared. You rock. But a couple of the locations that are logged are actually in the water.
Wow.
So I'm assuming that means that there must be like a little island out there somewhere that has a cell tower on it.
Oh, I can tell you about that, because I didn't realize this. And after I said, because I had said, if you look at the data, I think actually somebody was responding to something I said on this show, believe it or not. But I think if you look at the data, if you start to zoom in, you notice everything's laid out kind of in a grid.
Right.
You can almost, and I guess if I had really read the release notes of the iPhone tracker software that analyzes this file, the developers of the software wanted to anonymize the locations even more. And so they purposely snapped everything to a grid. So even the Wi-Fi and the cell tower locations that are shown in that map are not the actual locations.
Huh,
so it might be you're seeing stuff in the water because they actually moved the points to align them to a grid to sort of anonymize the data.
Well, it's suddenly not as cool as I thought.
So they set it up so that bad guys couldn't use the software to track people.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, so fast forward to May 4th, Apple released iOS 4.3.3, which reduces the size of that cache, number one. Do you remember what it reduced it to?
They're doing 7 days. Apparently what happened when they set it at two megabytes, you know, that data doesn't take up very much space.
And
it ended up being, in some cases, up to like a year's worth of cache data.
So now
they're just saying 7 days of data.
All right. And it no longer backs that up to iTunes. So there are some files in your user directory on the iPhone that traditionally aren't backed up, like cache files, because there's no reason to back up a cache file because it's just a cache.
Right.
And now this file is included in that, so it's not going to be backed up and ultimately means it's not going to be stored on your computer anymore. So it's not as easily accessible. And if you go in and turn off location services altogether, it's completely deleted from the phone.
Yeah. And I'm assuming, although they didn't really say this, but I'm assuming it also means when you turn on location services off, it's not even going to send or request that cache file from Apple.
That's how I understood that.
Yeah. Now, yeah. So in addition to those features, iOS 4.3.3, according to Boy Genius report, we're also going to be getting better battery life. So the battery issues that a lot of people have been having since, what was it, iOS 4.3 should now be resolved in 4.3.3. And it seems like with my phone, I've had 4.3.3 on here for the last few days. Battery life seems to be much better.
Yep. And should also point out that there's a 4.2.8 update for CDMA iPhones that has all these same fixes in it.
Yep. And have you guys noticed that it's a little bit snappier? It seems like it's a little better now. Just in general.
I haven't noticed that.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't notice that either.
Might just be me. Could be a better jailbreak version or something like that, because of course I'm jailbroken.
Another thing that Apple is supposed to patch with respect to this data that isn't happening, that did not get pushed in this update, is the encryption of the cached data file.
Oh, yeah.
So it's still on the phone in unencrypted form, meaning if someone got physical access to the device and then jailbroke it and grabbed that file, they could still get that data out of there. But it's a lot harder to get at. But the one thing about that nobody or very few people seem to mention, I might have mentioned last time too, but I'll bring it up again, is that if you use a passcode on the device, on the iOS devices that offer the hardware encryption, which I think is iPhone 3GS and newer on the iPhones and the iPad 2, iPad 1 and 2, I think.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
If you set a passcode lock, it will encrypt the data on the device. So just use your passcode lock and you can have that feature already. You don't have to wait for the next update. But it came out in the Senate hearing today that they'll update that in the next major update to the OS. So I don't know if that means major update like 4.4 or iOS 5. They really didn't say that.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we were going to talk about Senator Franken inviting Apple representatives and Google representatives up to the Hill to have a little chat about all this.
We could talk about that. I haven't paid any attention to that stuff. That did that happen today?
Fortunately, someone on this panel paid close attention.
Fortunately, someone came prepared.
Not, and it's not me. It's Mr. Gamut.
Yeah, I know. I was waiting to see if Michael eventually figured out it was me.
The man well, who wears the pants.
I have to point out, because the coverage, you know, I went through my feeds today to kind of catch up on all this stuff, and the coverage over at TMO was probably the most extensive. So
yeah, Dave and Brian did a fantastic job with that.
That
was great. All right, so the difference between presentation from Google and Apple. Okay, so when they start, you have the guy from Google who's like vice president of something nondescript, who previously was a lobbyist, so he knows how to play the Washington game.
Right. Yeah, the guy is what's his name? Johnson?
I can't remember.
Davidson. Yeah. Alan Davidson, and he's the director of public policy and government affairs.
Yeah.
for Google. So basically, you know, he's a PR guy, right?
Yeah, he's a PR guy, and he did his opening statements really well. I mean, he came across really well. And then Bud Tribble for Apple, who is a very smart man and very sharp, he does his opening statements, and he came across kind of insecure, uncomfortable, and it really showed. But when they got to the questioning, I think he handled the questions far better than what's his name from Google. And when they hit the point where they asked the guy from Google, in this document we gave you, and they hold up this packet, and the guy's mouth kind of comes open, and he says something like, I don't think I ever received that. And they went, nope, it's on your desk right now. And sure enough, the stuff was sitting there. He just had never looked at it. And so they're quizzing him about detailed information from this report they handed him. And he has no idea what they're talking about. And he came across unknowledgeable, I thought, in his responses. Whereas Bud Tribble did a much better job with his responses.
Do you know, a lot of the reports that I was reading, too, basically said that it seemed like Google was kind of pushing it on. Well, we're open, so we really don't know what happens after, you know, after the app gets loaded. You know, we kind of warn everybody, here's all the things that it's probably accessing, but once it starts accessing all that stuff, we're hands off unless we really get a complaint.
Yeah, that's how Google came across. Their stance felt like, look, this is what we're doing, and you should be happy for it because, hey, we're making the world better for you, so you're welcome. And the way Apple came across was more along the lines of, look, we're trying to have a very rigid control over what's coming in, what's going out, and we have very strict guidelines that all of our developers have to follow. We're arbitrarily auditing them to make sure that they're following our rules. And if they're not, they have the opportunity to address those issues, and they always do immediately. Yeah. So, yeah, Apple came across very proactive and very structured, and Google came across as, hey, it's a free-for-all, partay.
Yeah. My thing on it was, I was just wondering, at what point is Apple, how much oversight do they have to do, I guess? Because I think Franken asked about, you know, are you going to do something about related to the privacy policy of the third party apps, like ensure that they have certain privacy policies and that they're made available. And Apple was kind of like, well, you know, it's a requirement that they have a privacy policy, but we don't have technology to go in and check and make sure that that's there. Right.
Right.
But yeah, he pointed out, we're already doing all of these things. Like we anytime an app wants to access location, there's a pop-up that happens. And the user has to say, yes, I want to allow this app access to location. You can go into location services and turn that off per app or for the whole operating system. They have the little purple arrow thing that shows you, yes, this app is accessing location, or you can look at which apps have gone in the last 24 hours. It's sort of like, you know, how much more transparent or does Apple really need to make this stuff? And I think there's a certain point where it just becomes annoying, right? We end up with the Microsoft thing where it's like asking you every 2 seconds, the, you know, Windows XP thing Vista. Was it Vista the one that would pop up and constantly ask you, can I do this? Can I do that? Is it okay?
And I really don't want the government legislating my operating system interface.
So, okay, this panel was scheduled based on the issues with the location gate, quote unquote, right?
Right. Yes.
So what came out of it? It's just basically that Apple has it handled.
What came out of it was that both Apple and Google presented their position.
Right.
And when everything was said and done, Apple looked better during the hearing than Google did. Now, at this point, the Senate panel is going to review all of the testimony, all of the prepared written testimony that was submitted, and then they'll come back with whatever their comments are, and then we'll see where everything goes from there. Now, one thing, though, that I thought was really interesting, before Apple and Google were brought out, they started off by talking with the FTC and some other agencies. So they're talking with government agencies. And one of the things, and I wish I could remember who it was, but I can't off the top of my head. One of the things that was said was, look, you're starting to ask to do things that, or you're starting to ask if we should impose certain actions and restrictions on companies and the way they handle data. And what you're proposing or insinuating is so complex that there's no way we could expect these companies to do this, and there's no way we could do it ourselves, and we're the federal government. So if we couldn't do these things, how could you possibly put these demands on private companies? And I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I think what needs to happen is a lot of what Apple's doing already, and I think that's why they came off looking pretty good, because I think, with respect, if you compare Apple to all the other companies and all the other things, not just technology companies, but companies that gather information, and I'll point to the credit card companies. I mean, it's, you wouldn't even want to know what the credit card companies are doing with your data and how much they're tracking it and watching it. Somebody pointed out the fact that, you know, if you use your card at an unusual location, what happens, right? You get a phone call. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is an unusual charge, and that happens pretty dang quick. I was doing some. What was I doing? I was buying a new video camera one time, and I needed gas, and so I bought gas right before I went and made this video camera purchase. And I guess that's like a red flag transaction. I guess if your credit card gets stolen, what thieves will do a lot of times is they'll try and make a small purchase at like a gas station, or they'll try and buy gas with it, because you can pay at the pump. Right. And
right,
you don't have to actually be in front of everybody.
Oh,
just
right.
To test the card to see if it, you know, still works. And then they go make their purchase. And so that red flags in their system. And I got a phone call. I was still at, you know, in the parking lot after making the purchase. And I got the phone call. It's like, did you just make this purchase? I mean, that's how quick their system was at tracking. And it's like nobody gives a second thought about that. But,
you know, yeah.
You know, something like this comes out, and Apple, I think, has been, as I stated, for all those reasons, all the things that they do, it's pretty transparent. I know when an app is using my location on my iOS device, and I don't think anybody doesn't know, or I don't think it's being kind of really hidden.
Now, is that being
The location gate thing is a little bit of an exception because we didn't know that this data was being sent, and Apple did come out and say, okay, we found these things. The question is, do you take them at face value? Were these things bugs? Or are they changing their policy now that they kind of got, quote unquote, caught? And I really think they just didn't know or really didn't think it 100% through that this would be a problem. I think they looked at the data and went, it's anonymized data. In their mind, it was anonymized data. It's not really something that we're trying to use for tracking. We're not sharing it with anybody. We're using it internally. I think they didn't think there was any harm in it.
Well, it sounds like something that maybe some of the developers that work in that part of the system just kind of did and thought, okay, well, it's anonymized. It's not that big of a deal. And it might have not been something that higher ups at Apple were even conscious of.
Exactly. And so I kind of take them at face value where they went, you know, why did it take so long to respond? And I think Jobs or somebody said, well, you know, these are complex things and there's a lot going on here and we needed to make sure we knew what was going on and understood it before we came out and sort of responded to it so that we can intelligently say, okay, this is what was going on. This is why it happened. And this is what we're going to do to fix it. Mm-hmm. And I think they've done that. And I think that can kind of be the end of it. And that's why I think at this hearing, that's basically what they reiterated. And that's why they came out kind of looking better than Google.
Yeah. And when everything was said and done, yeah, you're right. Apple showed that they are proactively dealing with this whole mini scandal and had already released a patch to address a lot of the concerns.
Right.
Whereas Google came across as, look, this is what we do. You're welcome.
Because they use that data. I mean, they use that stuff and they do share it.
And
it's part of their business model. Their business can't exist without that data.
Yeah, there was one point where Google was asked about an incident where they sold like up to 3 years worth of user tracking data to third-party companies. And the guy responded, oh, that wasn't supposed to happen. And then the senator comes back with, then why did you file for a patent on the process for surreptitiously gathering user data and selling it?
Wow.
And that's a question that's really hard to answer without looking like an ass.
Yep.
Oh, wait, he already did with his that wasn't supposed to happen statement.
But, you know, I think if anything comes out of this at the end of the day, it's like anything else. It's like virus tracking or viruses and things like that. I think it's awareness. It's consumer awareness. And I think as long as companies are, you know, giving me the option and the power to opt in and opt out of this stuff and let me know when they're using it and how they're using it in a reasonable way, not buried in some terms of service or something like that, I think that's ultimately what we need. I need to be in control of my data because there is certain data. Like I use Twitter and I use Foursquare, but I'm knowingly sharing that information. I'm saying, yes, this is okay and I want this information. Or, you know, in the case of a credit card company or Apple or iAds, I might want them to share information to give me more relevant ads because I like that. But it's my choice. And I think that's the important thing. And a lot of times Google and these other companies aren't making that my choice. They're just sort of doing it on their own. Whereas I think Apple's been kind of upfront about, look, if you don't want this app to share your data, then this feature is not going to work as well. And then I get to choose. Well, I'd rather let them share that data and have better functionality, or no, I want to keep that private and I'm okay that feature might not work as well. I think it's going to be interesting because I think I'm curious what's going to happen with Find My iPhone or Find My iPad. If by turning location services off, are they going to have to make that feature not work because of some of these new rules and regulations? Because you have to share location data, you know, with location services off to make Find My iPhone work, right?
If you disable location services, Well, when you tap the little slider so it switches to off, you immediately get a dialogue that pops up asking you to confirm that you want to do that. And it warns you that Find My iPhone will stop working.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling that a lot of people, when put in that situation, are going to go, do I care that if Apple's getting my Wi-Fi location data to build out their traffic database, or do I care that I can get my iPhone back? Right?
And the majority of people are saying, I'd rather be able to get my iPhone back.
Yeah, I think so too. So I think Apple's going to still be able to get this data, because I think they're going to offer up functionality that most people are going to say, yes, it's okay. But the cool thing is, I think they're going to be very, like you said, flipping that switch. It's going to say, look, if you turn this off, here's the functionality you're going to lose. And now you get to choose. What do I want to do? But at least you're in control.
Right. You know, I'm guessing that that the crowds hanging out today around the studio are getting a little restless based on the sounds I'm hearing.
Well, that's actually, I think that's a cat that just knocked down a whole bunch of stuff.
I didn't even hear that.
Yeah.
That's the gallery. Right?
That's the gallery. We got a gallery on here. Yeah.
You're listening to, I guess this would be a comedy, hopefully more than a Greek tragedy, but.
It's going to be a comedy.
Well, considering the gallery is composed of cats.
Yeah, it works much better with as a comedy if cats are involved, so. But yeah.
Right.
So.
What else is happening, Michael?
What else is happening? I believe Apple is no longer accepting App Store reviews for promo codes. That's one thing that's happening. So if you, and I'm not sure this really affects anybody doing legitimate things except for people like us who do app reviews. But traditionally, if you need to get a hold of an application for review, you get a promo code from a developer. And, you know, that way you don't have to pay for it. You get the app, get to use it, review it, and all that stuff. But if you wanted to leave a review for that application on the iTunes App Store, you will no longer be able to do that. And the reason they've decided to do that is because developers, started giving out these promo codes to people who were willing to write favorable reviews.
Just to
for
write
them.
Favorable. Oh, no.
Yeah, so Apple
what could
has
possibly go wrong.
Yeah, Apple has removed the ability for, it seems like, new promo codes, newly issued promo codes to count as app purchases. So as you know, you
that's
can't.
A good, yeah, that's a good thing though. I mean, if you give a promo code out for a review, then you should go to the reviewer's site for the review, not the App Store.
Yeah, and I would say for the most part that is. I would say that's good. Back when I was doing iPhone Ellie, occasionally I would post under the iPhone Ellie account or the iPhone Ellie username on the app page. I would post maybe a snippet of the review from iPhone Ellie, but I'm not sure that there were many.
With a link back to iPhone Ellie?
I wish. I don't think you can actually put a link to anything in that, but I think it was username iPhoneAllie.com or something like that.
Read
but,
the full review at.
Yeah. Something like that. So, yeah. Developers doing shady things. Not cool. Cut it out. Right?
I'm just across the board in general. And I know there's nothing you can do about it. But the whole gaming the system thing just gets on my nerves so much. I'm tired of everybody. Everybody just stop gaming.
Well, there are certain forms of gaming the system, quote unquote. Such as the that cool flashlight app that also functioned as a tethering application, among other applications that also did that.
Yeah, well, that's not
really gaming the system, though.
Well,
that's
I'm trying to make a transition to another topic here. So you're supposed to play
oh,
along.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I blew it.
Yeah, you blew it. It's okay. Don't worry. We'll edit
totally
all this out
on your side, Adam.
Well, yeah, that's how it always is. But yeah, so I guess in the Android market, the carriers are getting irritated by the applications that are available that allow tethering, on the Android marketplace, and they're disallowing that now.
Is that just like versus the built-in?
Yeah, see, that's the thing that I'm not too clear on. Isn't it built-in already? Or I'm guessing this is an issue with applications that circumvent that ability.
That would be my assumption.
Yeah, in the same way as you know, apps like that flashlight application we're doing.
I'm partially concerned about that because I'm using an Android phone where I used an app to enable tethering where it wasn't there before. But what's interesting about this app versus some of the ways that you do it in iOS is that it's not really a hack, because all they've done is just, you know, kind of taken it out of the OS level settings. They've just hidden it. And all this third-party app does is give you access to that hidden feature. So it's almost like, you know, the system preference pane secrets, or if you do the little terminal commands in OS that enable little hidden preferences within apps.
So it's doing it in the same way that, like, some applications enable emoji.
Right? Yeah, like the feature's right. Already there. It's just kind of turned off.
Yeah.
And it's just flipping the bit to turn it back on. It's not, you know, it's not doing any low level, you know, rewriting of anything or bypassing of anything.
Gotcha.
So now, Adam, when you picked up that Android phone, you picked it up so you could use it for tethering.
Correct. That's all I use it for.
Yeah. And didn't the carrier tell you that was something you could do?
You can know. No.
Okay.
It did not.
The truth comes out.
It has data enabled on the phone, and it's unlimited data on the phone for, like, browsing on the phone.
Aha. So this could
but
be an issue for...
you're not supposed to have... I mean, the tethering's not turned on by default, or it's not there. So, but this third-party app is just an app that I downloaded that just gives me access to the little switch that's already in the operating system. So it's switching the same switch that's already in the OS that's just hidden. If that makes any sense.
It does make sense.
And in my mind, too, data is data. I mean, it really shouldn't matter if I'm browsing on the phone or browsing from some other thing.
Which is why I jailbreak.
And maybe that's wrong of me to think that way, but I mean, the bit is the same whether... So I just don't see a distinction if I turned on the phone and started streaming Netflix videos 24/7 versus turning on the phone and surfing from my iPad through it.
Right.
Like the bit is the bit is the bit. I mean, it's not like one costs them more than the other.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I'm saying.
It's definitely interesting to see that this is happening on Android as well as on the iPhone. Of course, we heard a few weeks ago that AT&T is starting to crack down on unauthorized tethering. So for people who, you know, maybe use either tethering apps or jailbreak and do that, you know,
right. The difference there is those people aren't paying for the tethering part, right?
No, I think in both cases the tethering is not being paid for. The specific tethering feature is not being paid for, but the data is being paid for, I think, in both cases, right?
I believe you're right.
I'm probably splitting hairs because that's a good point now. Now you got me feeling guilty about my phone.
Yep, there you go. So I guess we should move on to the next topic, which is, according to an AT&T representative... And again, you know, we hear a lot of things from AT&T representatives and, you know, customer-facing people, especially with AT&T. You know, we hear just things that they like to make up. But this one sounds somewhat credible that, according to them, Apple has informed them that they do not plan to release an iPhone in June or July, although there will be a new one in the future.
All right, so I need to start by saying fakeity, fake, 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 and follow it up with, but the timing is probably correct anyhow. Apple is not going to disseminate information that gets to the customer service level about their product release plans. That does not happen. That's it.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that one, Jeff.
So, yeah, well, thank you. But the fact that they're saying the iPhone is not coming out in that late June, early July window, that part I believe is correct because it doesn't make sense for Apple to release a new iPhone that early.
Why is that? Based on the white iPhone coming out?
Well, we have the iPhone 4 hitting Verizon in February. We have the white the iPhone 4 hitting Verizon in February. White iPhone 4 coming out, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
And then that puts us just a few weeks from a potential new iPhone launch. That seems a little too close together.
Right, especially considering all the other features that seem to be kind of coming together for a major release later in the year.
Sure. And considering the iPhone 4 is still selling really well, it goes back to what Adam says quite often, follow the money. Apple's still making plenty of money off of the iPhone 4 and, for that matter, the 3GS.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no need for Apple to push out a new product to keep that current interest strong because it's going to stay strong. I think if Apple releases iOS 5 in the same general window where a new iPhone would come out and it has significant new features, that will drive a lot of interest in the iPhone 4 all the way through fall.
So you think they might? What the heck just happened?
Okay, let me let Jeff back in on this. How do I do that?
Isn't he here?
Call. Here we go. Yeah,
it looked like he was here.
Yeah,
that
okay.
was weird.
Yeah, that was weird. So, sorry I cut you off, Adam. Sorry my iPad cut you off. You want to take a guess at what happened?
No. I have no. You got an alert?
You know how the iPad 2 is full of magnets?
Yep.
Yes.
I had my iPad resting on my laptop, and I moved it, and then suddenly it went to sleep.
Oh no!
I tripped the sleep sensor.
Oh, on the Mac.
On my Mac, yeah. With the iPad, tripped the sleep sensor. So let that be a lesson to everyone with Apple laptops and iPad 2s.
Don't put your iPad on your.
And I think that's something that you mentioned actually a few weeks ago on the show, didn't you, Adam?
I talked about it with. I had somebody who had emailed me and was like, My iPhone can turn off my MacBook if I put it in this one area over this. And what I realized was it was the magnet in this, the teeny tiny magnet that's in the speaker.
Oh yeah,
in the iPhone was just strong enough to pull that switch. If you'd get it just right, so you can kind of spin it around or play with it, and you get it right in just the right spot, and boom.
Yeah, well, it was a lot easier.
The MacBook goes to sleep.
It was much easier in this case.
Yeah, they're much more powerful magnets.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So what I was asking was if Jeff, you thought that that means you think iOS 5 will release before the iPhone 5? Because I kind of figured they both just come out together.
Yeah, that's what I would assume too.
I think it's possible. But if iOS 5 is held for the iPhone 5 launch, I would not be surprised by that either.
Well, I think we're going to see a pre-release demo version / developer version at WWDC.
Yeah.
And I think that alone would, show enough interest or be interesting enough to those people who are thinking about buying iPhones. They see that and, they think, I guess it'd be fine to get an iPhone 4 because, I'm sure Apple will at the same time say, oh yes, iOS 5 will also work on the iPhone 4.
Yeah, if Apple's very clear when they show off iOS 5 and say, and you will have all of these features on your iPhone 4, then that will go a long way to making people feel comfortable buying an iPhone 4 now, knowing that there's something bigger and better coming in just a few months.
Right. So it'll be good for those who want to get the latest iPhone, but also for those who just, you know, want to get an iPhone and they don't really care too much about it, but they want those extra features that will be shown off at WWDC. All right, we have a lot more stuff to talk about. The next iPad possibly offering a 3D display, iOS 5, and light leak on certain panels in the iPad 2. But before we get to that stuff, we have to talk about this week's sponsor, which is Stitcher Radio at stitcher.com/WHC. And for those who don't know what Stitcher Radio is, Stitcher provides an aggregation of many wonderful audio formatted podcasts, news shows, comedy shows, and actually a lot of Apple specific stuff as well. So you can check out Adam's show. You can check out a lot of the Mac Observer shows, including the Geek Gab. And of course, we have communicators at stitcher.com/WHC. But the reason we're talking about Stitcher is because they have a wonderful iOS application that works on, of course, the iPad, the iPod Touch, the iPhone. It's a universal application, so it has specific formats for both the iPad and the iPhone. And with the application, you can peruse Stitcher's enormous library of different types of audio entertainment and listen to them for free without having to download, sync, or do any of that stuff. All you got to do is find what you want, bookmark the stuff that you like, and whenever there's a new episode available, all you have to do is go into the application, tap on the new episode, and it starts playing immediately without you having to download or sync or do any of that annoying stuff that you'd normally have to do through iTunes. And so in addition to that stuff, of course, Stitcher's application is free, so you can download it in the App Store right now. They're giving away an iPad 2 for listeners of We Have Communicators. All you have to do is go to stitcher.com/WHC. And when you sign up, make sure that you tap on, so in the application when you're signing up, tap on the I have a promo code button and make sure to enter WHC so they know that you're listening to WHC, to We Have Communicators, and you'll be entered to win an iPad 2. So you have, in addition to streaming podcasts and other forms of audio entertainment, you can also get live radio streams, which is very cool. So it's based on your location if you want, or you can search through their big library of live streaming radio. You can listen in the background, of course, just like and the iPod. You don't have to be in the application. You can start an episode of We Have Communicators, for example. Go do other things. It even has the 30-second skip back feature that is very handy. That's stitcher.com/WHC, stitcher.com/WHC, and you'll be entered to win a free iPad 2. And with that, should we talk about the next iPad possibly having a 3D display?
Can I just start crying now?
Okay, so
I'm so freaking... The 3D thing, it just, if you want to just say something that irks me, just say 3D.
No, I'm with you 100%. I would say 1,000% on that.
Such a gimmick.
It is a gimmick.
Unless it's like Princess Leia going, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope.
Let's be honest, even that is crap.
Yeah, but
like
if
all your TV shows looked like that, even if it was 3D hologram thing, but it's all like blue and staticky. Yeah, that's how I really want, you know, my HD programming to look.
Yeah, but for all the Star Wars geeks out there, they would love that.
Yeah, I would love that.
Is that really how you'd want to watch your favorite TV show in that mode?
oh no, the only reason I would use that mode would be to show the video, you know, Princess Leia leaning over Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That would
my
be
own
cool. Yes, that's absolutely it. That would be awesome. But as then far as like this being a better technology, like visual technology has been progressing so great. So we had, you know, VHS, and then we had DVD, which was so much better. And then we got Blu-ray and HD, and we've got these, you know, retina displays that are gorgeous displays, and movies and videos look great. And then we want to muck it up with this technology that throws a layer of crud over everything, like this grayish, weirdish film that throws the colors off, or, you know, without the 3D glasses stuff. Even like I looked at the, I'm assuming with the iPad, they're talking about this technology that's kind of like the new Nintendo 3D thing.
Yeah, they say it's
sort
going
of like
to,
where you're looking into a box and you don't need glasses.
Yeah, they say it's going to be glassesless. Probably,
I hope this doesn't happen.
Well, they say it's probably going to use.
Yeah, even that, if you look at it, it's cool. The effect is cool, but you still get that 3D-ish. It's like a layer. It's like looking through a layer of dirty glass.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That's the best way I can equate it.
It doesn't. I'm guessing that if Apple's going to do anything involving 3D, they're not going to do it in the way that Nintendo's doing the 3DS or any of these other glassesless technologies are being done. I think they're going to do something that's more akin to what we saw a few weeks ago with that 3D head tracking demo. Do you remember that? There is a video of 3D on the iPad 2 using head tracking.
Yes.
Using the front camera. So it basically, it determined where, from where you were viewing the iPad screen, and based on that, it moved the perspective of items on the screen to match that, to make it seem as though it was 3D. So it's apparent that that's possible right now with the iPad 2, not requiring any more technology than what the iPad 2 already offers.
Right.
And, you know, there are certain circumstances, such as with, I will say, Tron Legacy. I saw it the first time I saw it in 3D. The second time I saw it in, you know, without 3D. And I have to say that the way that they did it in that movie, there weren't any gimmicky, you know, someone's jabbing a spear at your face kind of stuff. It was mostly just adding a little bit of extra
depth. It was tasteful 3D.
Yeah, it was just adding a little bit of depth and a little more realism to it. And, you know, so this article from RCR Wireless is talking about how people in Hollywood are preparing to, you know, release content for the next generation iPad. So they're preparing to create that material for the next iPad that will supposedly have 3D. But I'm guessing that if Apple is truly investing in making the iPad 2 3D in any way, that I would guess that they're going to focus more on making the interface a little nicer using 3D and maybe providing it to developers, you know, in games and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I mean, they're cool visual tricks, and it can look cool if it's done right. I'm not saying that's not the case. So I don't want to get a bunch of emails to say, you know, all the cases for 3D. Yes, there's some cases for 3D, but my biggest problem is that overall, 95% of the time for me, it throws up a layer that detracts from the experience and does not add to the experience. And I'll even use your example of Tron, because I only had the option, I think, to see Tron in 3D. And had I had the option not to, I would have went with not. And the reason is because I like to see the images in full clarity with the full color and, you know, in HD. We've got these great digital projectors that have been a long time coming that display awesome images. And the 3D technology that we currently have really, in my mind, detracts from that. It did not add to the experience for me. And I'm not saying I didn't get the depth. I mean, yes, it had the depth and that was kind of cool, but it's still a cool gimmick. It's a gimmick and a trick to me. It's not enhancing my experience with the film.
Yeah. No, I would have to agree with you on that. Ultimately, 3D still seems very gimmicky. And I think that unless Apple sees a real reason to implement the technology other than just a simple gimmick in the way that, you know, movies are being produced, then I don't think they're going to do it. However, I think it does make sense in the way that, you know, that head tracking demo work.
Okay.
For some applications, very specific applications, not just the entire operating system, I think it would be a
Let me ask you this, because there was a... So just trying to think of applications, right? And knowing that Apple can usually do things better than most people, but do you remember there was an app that came out that gave you a 3D kind of desktop that was a similar effect to that Bump Top, I think it was called, right? Do you remember that?
Oh, right.
Did you ever try that? So it was kind of cool because the idea was that you could put, you know, notes on the, sort of the back wall. So when you were looking at your desktop, it was kind of like looking into a space, and you could have certain things off to the side, kind of on the sidewall, and things on the desktop on the bottom, and then up on the top. And it makes a really cool, all this stuff makes really cool tech demos. Like you're talking about the Princess Leia thing. It's like a really cool thing to show somebody, like, look how awesome this is. And I've played around with a lot of these apps. There's a few games that use the similar style effect on the iPad, and they are really cool to look at and fun to play with. But at the end of the day, the practical applications just to me seem to fall short. So I'm curious if you ever tried using that and if you felt that that was a better experience than what you know, a traditional desktop currently offers.
I felt the whole 3D desktop thing like that was gimmicky. It was it was like a nice proof of concept.
Yeah. So I'm not saying we shouldn't explore these things and go that way. I just think we're not there yet. And maybe Apple can take it further. They've proven me wrong in the past, and so I'm willing to accept it. But I just worry that it ends up being more of something that's put in there to appease Hollywood because they want to put 3D films on an iPad. And
well, I hope that...
I just say, ugh.
I hope that this rumor of having 3D on the next iPad will be in the same league as having... the accelerometer.
Yes.
I think that it would...
Where it's transformative of the technology and really does something. Yes. If that happens, then I will eat my words and I will say this is a great thing. But if it's all the other applications of 3D, including, and like I said, the new Nintendo 3D thing, I had a chance to see it. It's really cool. But I don't know that it enhances the experience enough for me to offset the distraction that the sort of loss of color and clarity and stuff takes away.
No, I don't think that Apple will do it in a way that will detract from the clarity of the display in any way. If that's what has to happen for 3D to come to the iPad, they're not going to do it.
Yeah, that's the only technologies I've really seen. You know, beyond like you're saying, the head tracking thing is more of that. I forget what they call it. It's like an isometric kind of, you know, thing where you're looking at the standard Retina display, and then it's kind of like looking into a box. But again, the closest application I can think to that is this box top thing, where you could maybe do some things with the desktop space. So it gives you more planes to kind of put content on. And if Apple can do something with that in a really creative way that makes the experience of using iOS better, then that might work.
Yeah,
but now that's really just a software thing. That's not a display technology, or that's not adding. You can do that on an iPad now.
Right. Now, the other interesting thing about that idea is that one of the big features of the iPad has been its IPS display. The fact that, you know, you can have multiple people viewing from different angles, for example.
Yep.
It would not work well if you had more than one person, because obviously it would not be able to. It would track only one person's head, and only and only apply to one person's perspective. So it'd be interesting to see how that would be implemented in.
Oh yeah, then you really couldn't do anything at the, because I don't know about you guys, but very often my iPad experience is a group experience.
Yeah. No, I definitely have.
You're showing people
there's
stuff.
There's this absurd photo of me and a few of my friends standing in our kitchen, all playing. You know that game that they have at a lot of bars where you are shown two seemingly identical pictures, but there are some very subtle things that are different between the two, and you're supposed to identify those by tapping on them.
I think it's funny that you say in bars they have this game.
Well, it's usually a bar game. It's usually a scummy Midwestern bar, as far as wherever I've seen them. But you're familiar with the game, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Just not from bars.
Oh, yeah,
not
me. Bowling alleys, maybe? Where do you guys see that game? I'm interested now.
Kids magazines when I was growing up as a kid. Like, find the differences.
See,
coloring books? I don't know.
Okay. Well, anyway, so that there's an absurd picture of me and several friends all just having this seemingly ridiculously good time all gathered around the iPad. And, you know, that experience would be sullied by, you know, an attempt at 3D, which would not work in that case. That
now, keep in mind, when Apple introduces new technologies and new interfaces into their products, they don't do what everyone does. They do the Apple thing. So getting worried right now about what Apple may or may not do with 3D, I think is unwarranted, because if they actually bring that sort of look to the iPad, they will do it in the Apple way.
Right. And that's why I'm thinking, you know, if they do implement it, one, it won't cause any issue with the display, and two, it probably won't be done in a gimmicky, you know, catering to Hollywood sort of way.
Which is why I will say it's not going to be part of the next iPad.
Well, I wonder how thick a display has to really be to make that work. Because there's not much room in an iPad right now.
Yeah. I mean, everything's glued together, so.
Yeah. It again, it depends on how they do it. If they're just doing the software thing that they could do now, that's no change to the iPad. If they're going to do the Nintendo kind of thing, I think the technology's not advanced enough for what Apple would want to implement. So I would say that technology rules that kind of application out. So really, I don't think, my guess is this is another one of those things where Apple's playing around with some different technologies internally, trying to figure out if there's an application for it. And then people are picking up on that and going, oh, the next iPad's going to have 3D.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So moving right along to our iOS 5 rumors category. According to 9to5Mac, Apple is supposedly negotiating with Verizon about allowing iOS updates over the air. So according to them, the over the air updates would not come until after iOS 5. So that would mean you have to update to iOS 5 in iTunes, as you do now. But once you do update to iOS 5, subsequent point updates would be delivered over the air as they are currently on the Apple TV. Now, the interesting thing about that is that I'm not sure it makes sense to provide enormous iOS updates over the cellular network at all.
I don't think they would do that.
I think it would be strictly Wi-Fi if they did allow that.
Then why negotiate with cell providers?
Right. Because here's how it plays out. iOS 5.1 is released, and then Verizon and AT&T's networks go down because everybody's trying to download a 400 megabyte package.
But it could be more. I think it'd be more. It's still going to be an impact, even if they do an incremental update. So if Apple rejiggers things so that they can push out patches, just the changed code
instead of entire
over the air, that's still a significant impact with the number of iOS devices that are out there. Even if it was, you know, a few megabytes per iOS device, that could still be a huge impact on the cell networks.
Sure, if it's something
when
that,
it's happening all at once,
right? So that on that day when the new update comes out, even if it is, like you said, just a few megabytes to patch the operating system, it would still be pretty significant. And
if you have 4 million phones, you know, all downloading within the span of a few hours, you know, 10 megabytes of data, that could be that could be significant. I don't know how the networks pan out, but they might still need to kind of clear it just from that regard. And I think that's the only way you could do over the air updates. You can't be pushing out a 400 megabyte, 450 megabyte update.
Yeah, iOS 4.3
to do incremental.
iOS 4.3.3 was 700 megabytes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would hardly make sense over a Wi-Fi network to.
And then you also have the whole backup issue, because right now, you know, when you do it connected, you're getting a backup right before you do the update, which is kind of a nice thing. So, I think you could still push the incremental updates. If something goes south, you're going to have to go back to your Mac though and restore and then reapply.
Yeah, so it seems like something where, at the most, Apple would provide a patch style update over the air. Yep. And anything else, you got to do with iTunes.
Yeah.
And that seems like a reasonable compromise.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to do an over the air restore.
Well, you also have to think about how much space that would require on your phone. So if you have to, you know, for example, if you're updating a turn-by-turn GPS app like TomTom or Navigon or something like that has all of the maps stored locally, you have to have enough space to not only store that download, but you also have to have enough space to then unzip that download and then and then replace it. So that's why you need to have like 4 gigs free to download an update to an app like that. So, you know, again, you'd have an issue like that on your hands with iOS updates. So I think that it's probably going to stick to the Apple TV in that capacity, and maybe we'll see some patch style updates, but beyond that, it makes way more sense to offer a reason to users to hook up their phones to their computers every once in a while. Because as we know, you got to back up.
That's right.
So I do think over-the-air backup is going to be part of potentially part of the cloud service thing too. But I think it would be an incremental thing where you would initially do a backup with iTunes, right? It would do the full backup, and that would be pushed to the cloud from your desktop. And then when you were out and about, it could pick up incremental changes as you download new apps and things like that, put new content on, and just push that out if you wanted to.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because according to TechCrunch, Apple is now in negotiations with Nuance, also known as the company that provides the service between... They own Dragon Naturally Speaking, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so yes. They're the company behind Dragon Naturally Speaking, the software app that allows you to talk to your computer and it understands you and dictates various things. I believe that Nuance's technology is part of Siri, which Apple acquired last year.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Siri does use their technology.
So it makes sense that if Apple is planning to include voice recognition capabilities in iOS 5, as it seems like they will do since they purchased Siri, that they would have to negotiate with Nuance on certain things.
Licensing.
Yeah.
But other than that, no. So the other part of the rumor that's been floating around is that Apple's going to buy Nuance.
Right, which does not seem likely.
Which is not going to happen. And now that I've said that, with my track record, tomorrow Apple will announce they bought Nuance. But... No, I don't see that happening. A licensing agreement for some sort of voice control for the iPhone? Sure.
It wouldn't surprise me at all
if Apple's doing something like that.
Well, considering they're the leader in that kind of technology.
Yeah. And if you can license something like that instead of having to reinvent it, well, that's a lot cheaper.
Well, yeah. So in addition to supposedly being in negotiations with Nuance, it seems as though part of Apple's strategy for getting speech recognition in iOS 5 would involve having the actual computational power behind that service would would actually take place in the cloud. And the rumor is that Apple would be focusing that at its mysterious data center.
That's how the Nuance technology works now. So if you download the Dragon app for your iOS device, or if you use Siri, which is powered by that, I'm pretty sure when you give it a command, it goes out to the Nuance servers in the cloud and then returns back the results in terms of processing the speech.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So it makes so now the rumor is, I believe, again, coming from TechCrunch, that the primary reason Apple built this data center is for that capability.
Which, I don't know if I'd go out and say the primary reason, but I think everybody's determined that that facility is way huger than any one of the applications that's been thrown out as a possible use for that space.
Right.
So I'm thinking that, you know, the answer is D, all of the above.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one, that we're probably going to see the part of the voice recognition happening there, but we're also going to see a lot of the other cloud-based features that we're hearing about, such as, you know, media storage and streaming coming from there as well.
Media storage, mobile me services, iTunes, audio and video distribution.
Time travel.
And didn't it double in size? So maybe one whole half is just a backup of the other one.
Probably.
Like a whole mirrored data center.
No, I like that every week that the data center hasn't opened, that whatever next thing people think Apple's working on, that's what's going to be in the data center now. So I can't wait to see what it is next week.
Yeah, it's going to be everything.
Can I say something about the speech recognition technology and this whole Nuance thing and the Siri thing? Because I think, I can't remember who said it earlier, but I think, Jeff, you said, you know, Apple doesn't just do what everybody else is doing. Because one of the complaints you're hearing a lot about iOS when compared to Android and what Google's done is that Google is way better on the voice recognition side of things. But when they say voice recognition, what they really just mean is voice commands. You know, you can speak things into it and it does stuff. The technology behind Siri, and I had to start playing it around with it again when I started reading the Nuance thing, because it had been a while since I tried it out. It is really cool because it uses natural language parsing to kind of get the commands. So you can say, you know, find sushi restaurants near me that have reservations available for 7 p.m. on Thursday.
That's, you know, very Star Trek.
Yeah, those sorts of commands. Then it kind of goes out and it does little processing, and then it's like, oh, you know, here it is. But then you can compound the commands. So that result comes back, and you say, no, actually, I'd rather go on Friday, and it'll go, oh, and it'll kind of move everything to Friday, and then you can say, oh yeah, make that reservation for me, please. And then it integrates with something like, you know, a service like OpenTable, and then actually makes the reservation. Right. And then you can say, oh, and can you add that to my calendar? And then it goes and does that sort of thing. So that, I think, when you think about that technology combined with the accuracy and the power of sort of the Dragon technology, and then layer on top of that some of the stuff that's already built into iOS, and I'm specifically thinking something like Spotlight, and then you start thinking about the file system, and especially if this ever got integrated into, say, Lion and iOS, that how cool would it be to be able to say, you know what, I need that attachment from the email from Michael that I received last Wednesday. Can you bring that up for me? And that would just happen.
Yeah, then you'd have the actual, what was it? The knowledge navigator.
Yeah. But I think if you look at these underlying technologies and you start to connect them together, you're like, wait a minute, this is actually a real possibility. This can actually really happen. And I think Apple really acquired Siri for the underlying sort of parsing of that natural language and the knowledge of the people there that had been working on that sort of thing to kind of, and they're going, hey, if we combine this with Spotlight, which people are already using because file systems have gotten so unruly, you know, I hardly use my file system anymore. I use Spotlight for finding most documents. Now, if I can combine that with speech and I can talk to my computer in a natural way and it understands and it knows what to go get and return and retrieve for me, that becomes a very powerful thing. And it nobody else is doing that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, Google does not have that type of speech recognition technology. That's not what they're doing. So I'm starting to think this is going to be really cool. And if they show any of that off at WWDC, I think people are going to just, it's going to be another, okay, Apple's done it again.
Yeah, people will flip.
It does kind of seem like they're gearing up to do something like that, that they're planning to release something much more significant than the past several years with the standard, okay, here are the new features of
iOS. It's not going to be next track.
It's not going to be call my best friend, and really it turns out it starts calling some person you don't want to talk to.
Exactly.
Which is really just all that happens whenever I try to have my phone dial a number for me.
Oh, I love it. I'm trying to control the iPod and it's calling people.
Yeah, next track, calling your mom.
Thanks.
Call mom, sexting Bill.
No. Yep. All right. So I think, unless you guys have any other news topics to discuss, I think it's time for our iDevice picks.
There was one item on here I just want to ask about in general, because I'm debating on whether I take my iPad 2 back to Apple or not, and it's the light leakage.
Oh yeah, so
story about LG, the delay in the iPad 2, or shortages in the iPad 2 linked to the fact that the LG displays Apple is using had light leaking issues, and we've had a bunch of people say with early iPads at least, I've heard that replacements aren't any better, that there's this light leaking thing.
Yeah, so with the there are two iPad 2 LCD panel suppliers. That's LG and Samsung. And supposedly the ones from LG have light leakage problems, which is why it contributed to the shortage of iPads. Because they slowed down production of those faulty panels. But, you know, as we've heard from many places, that light leakage problem is in many of the iPad 2s that are out there, including mine and I guess including yours, Adam.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to say, though, is I have learned that light leakage is in every LCD panel practically in existence. And again, it's going to vary dependent on some factors, and the how extreme it is will probably vary from display to display, from manufacturer to manufacturer. And I think even I'm guessing based on the size of the display, because I don't notice it as much on my iPhone 4. But, you know, this is one of those things where I think the internet drives you crazy. You know, it's what I would call the WebMD effect, where you have some symptoms and you go plug it into WebMD and then you're like, oh my God, I'm dying. I have this horrible rare disease.
Right But it is a real,
everybody's saying iPad 2s have light leaking, and here's how you test it. You go in a completely dark room, you turn the brightness up completely to 100%, so you do a bunch of things that you're never ever going to do in like real life, right? And then you see all these white spots on a completely black screen sort of coming out from the edges of the device. But if you then flip it around and you put it into normal usage mode, you really don't notice it. But what I did was I took my notebook screen, did the same thing, light leak. Did my iPhone 4, did the same thing, light leak. Did my iPad 1, same thing, light leak. So is this really an issue? And is there really a LCD display that doesn't suffer from this issue to one degree or another? Like, we just overly panicking about something stupid?
I don't think we're overly panicking. I think this is a real issue. In some cases, there are probably more cases where there is no issue, but I can definitely say that I have been using my iPad 2 in the same manner in which I used my original iPad, and I didn't have any of these giant light leak blotches on the bottom edge of my original iPad, and I noticed the light leakage generally at night when I'm using the iPad before I go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my backlight turned all the way down And it is in a dark room, so it's much easier to see. But I didn't notice that at all on my first generation iPad.
Okay. So are you going to return yours at some point and try and get it exchanged?
I do intend to do that. But yeah. I'm kind of hesitant to do it right away because it seems like I might just get another one with the same issue.
Yeah, that's the same place I'm in. So
yeah.
Supposedly they brought on a bunch of new suppliers, but I'm not hearing that, you know, this thing's going to be fixed. And I half wonder if, because the iPad 2, in my experience, is just generally brighter too, that it's become more noticeable only because it's just a brighter display or a brighter backlight.
Yeah. It's just, you know, in my case, it's something that I notice every time I, you know, go to use my iPad in a low light room. And, yeah.
I don't know. I do this and the answer is, well, don't do that.
Don't use my iPad at night.
No, I mean, like in my case, I really didn't notice it until I performed this little in the dark trick and, you know, with the iPad in my bathroom and like cranked it all up. And now, of course, if I really want to see it, I can notice it. But, you know, had no one ever told me that it was a problem, it probably would have never been a problem. So, you know, did it get self-created? And now do I have to worry about it and return the dang thing?
Yeah.
That's all.
Jeff, have you noticed it on your iPad too?
I do not have a problem with it at all.
All right. There's the only sane person on the podcast.
Oh, man, we are screwed.
Okay. So I think it's time for our iDevice picks, and we'll let the only sane person go first.
All right. My pick this week is Adobe Easel, which just came out today, finally. It was supposed to come out when Adobe released their Photoshop update a week or so ago. But anyhow, so it's out now. It's sort of like a finger painting application for your iPad with a completely different interface style than I've seen on any other application. You take all your fingers and you put them on the display at the same time, and under each fingertip and under your thumb, a different control comes up. So you can change the colors and opacity and brush sizes. And it's like working with watercolors. So the longer a color sits on the virtual paper, the drier it gets. So if you mix colors very quickly, they bleed together a lot more than if you wait for them to essentially dry.
Oh, cool.
All right. Now, the kicker is that if you're running Photoshop CS5 with the 12.0.4 update that came out like a week or two ago, you can then link the application on your iPad back to Photoshop and send the images that you're making on your iPad back over to Photoshop, and they open up as a document right in Photoshop for you.
Awesome.
And it's $4.99.
Yeah, I highly recommend checking that out. And I believe there are some videos of Adobe Easel in action that you can check out on YouTube. And it's Adobe EAZEL.
Right. It's a very funky interface. I'm not completely happy with that interface, but at least it works. If you're missing a finger, don't bother buying Adobe Easel.
Yeah.
I'm serious, because if you don't have five fingers that you can put on that screen, you can't use the interface.
Interesting.
And it automatically detects if you're left or right-handed, which was a big plus for me.
Oh, yeah. Because you're left-handed, right?
Right.
No left.
I'm so confused now.
I'm sorry. All right. And Adam, what is your iPhone pick this week?
I am going to go with a very practical app if you are a web developer or you run a website and you use Google Analytics. So I had a need recently. I had a client. I was out and about, and they wanted some data from their Google Analytics. And I went out and I tried a couple different of the analytics apps, and I ended up with one called Analytics Pro. And it is from, it's the BlackburnApps.com version. And the reason I ended up with this one was, one, that it gave me the ability to actually generate a TXT or a PDF file that I could then quickly and easily email. It also has print capability, But the other thing is it also just offered all of the different reports that Google Analytics offers. So you can get summaries, you can get your visitor reports, including all of the location stuff and browsers and operating systems. It has all your different traffic sources, including AdWord campaigns and keywords and all of the content areas. So it was kind of the most full-featured. It was also one of the better-looking ones in terms of the actual reports themselves. But most importantly, like I said, in this particular case, I needed to be able to email a report as a PDF, and it was very quick and easy to do that with this application. And I want to say I don't have the price up in front of
it's
me.
$6.99.
So it was a little more expensive, but I think it was well worth it. I tried some of the free ones, and they just didn't hold up. You know, they were limited in terms of their features. Oh, it also supports. I have multiple accounts under my account, and it supports all of the different accounts. So you can have multiple accounts, including like multiple master accounts. So I don't know if you know how Google Analytics works, but you can sort of be assigned to different websites under a Google account or Gmail account. You could also have multiple Gmail accounts that might have multiple websites that are managed under that, and it supports that. So.
Cool.
Analytics Pro by Blackburn Apps.
For the iPhone or for the iPad?
That was my one. Okay, so yeah, you brought up my one complaint. I got it for my iPhone because that's the device that I had when I was out and about. I wish it was a universal app. There was another one that was a universal app, but it just didn't have the features that this one had. So you kind of have to make a call on that one. But is it the same price on the iPad too? I might buy it for the iPad as well.
It's the same price.
Yeah, I might just buy it for the iPad. I mean, at the end of the day, $14 for a really good analytics app for iPhone and iPad, that's not much to pay. Really?
Yep. And so my pick this week is StarWalk for iPad. And I might have picked this.
You picked StarWalk before, yeah.
I've definitely picked it before. Now, the reason I'm picking it again, though, is because if you have an iPad 2, it's been recently updated so that it takes advantage of the camera. So on the iPhone, it's been like this for quite a while. But when you... Well, the cool thing about StarWalk is it shows you a virtual sky. So you can look up virtually, of course. You can look at the sky, identify stars, constellations, satellites, all that fun stuff. Tap it, get more information. And but the awesome feature about this app is that you can hold it up above your head, and it will go into this sky tracking mode. So using the compass and the accelerometer, it will determine where you're pointing your iPhone or your iPad and, you know, allow you to identify actual stars and other items in the sky by using your iPhone or iPad. Now, with the iPhone, you have a camera. And so at some point they added the ability to do like an augmented reality type thing. So you could actually match it up very, very closely to what you're looking at on your screen. So you can get a very accurate view of what you're actually looking at in the sky.
That was back in December, I think.
When they first added that feature?
Yeah.
And yeah. So now with the iPad 2, they recently added that same ability because you have a camera in your iPad too. And it's very cool. So I highly recommend checking out StarWalk for iPad. It's $4.99.
Three times.
Is it three times that I've picked that app?
Because you picked it when they added this update for the iPhone. But that's just how cool it is. It's a cool app.
Yeah, it is. So $4.99, StarWalk for iPad. Or if you don't have an iPad too, you know what? Check out StarWalk for iPhone. It's awesome as well.
I think it would probably work. It works on the iPod Touch too, right?
Yeah, it does. Works on all the devices.
They all have cameras now.
Yeah, I've been waiting to see the space station, and I keep missing the times where it passes.
Where it moves by.
Yeah, I think it's usually about 2 or 3 minutes where you can actually see it go by.
I remember seeing Michael's going to now show my age.
Sputnik.
I remember seeing Skylab falling.
Oh, really? You were able to watch it as it...
I think so.
...burnt up?
If memory serves, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I couldn't see it. But that's...
I don't remember where it came down. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just remembering that it happened.
Nah, let's just say that
I
you
didn't
saw
really
it.
See it.
Yeah, let's say that you got to see it, yeah. and the rest of us didn't.
And someone's going to email me and cool say, thing. You doofus, that happened in the Southern Hemisphere.
No, we're just not going to read those emails. All right. And with that, of course, you can find our iPhone pics as well as the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. Just click on the episode. You can see all the show notes and links to everything and, of course, the pics. So if you're driving and you don't want to write something down or search the App Store, don't worry about it. You can check it out when you get home. Wehavecommunicators.com. Of course, you can leave a comment, join in the discussion for each episode using the Discuss feature at the bottom of each episode. So you don't have to create an account. You just sign in with your Twitter or your Facebook, or if you have a Discuss account, you can sign in with that too. It's really fun to do that as well. Of course, you can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. That is the email address. It'd be really nice if you reviewed the show in iTunes. We haven't asked for that, I don't think, ever. But then I realized, hey, it'd be a good thing to ask for. So if you like the show, leave us a review in iTunes.
And if you don't like the show...
Yeah, go away.
Yeah, don't leave.
Why are you listening? If you don't like the show, why are you listening?
Because they like to make fun of us.
Okay. Well, send it to Jeff's email address.
Which is writetospam@macobserver.com.
Yeah, right to that one specifically. Or if you can just rate a show if you don't want to leave an entire review, right? You can just give it a star rating.
Yeah.
Yeah, go do that if you don't have the time. But reviews are greatly appreciated. You can just say, it's awesome. That counts as a review. So check that out. Of course, in the podcast marketplace this week is our wonderful sponsor, Stitcher Radio. You can win a free iPad 2 and check out the awesome service that is Stitcher Radio by going to stitcher.com/WHC. So that's STITCHER.com/WHC. And of course, you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, which is MacObserver.com. You can find him on Twitter, twitter.com/JGamet, and his Zazzle store, which is Zazzle.com/JGamet. You can find his wonderful drawings on shirts, hats, mugs, thongs, if that's your thing. If you're a lady.
If that's your thing.
Or if that's your thing, I guess. And of course, we're not judging anybody. And of course, you can find the official We Have Communicators mug there as well, Zazzle.com/JGamet. Thanks for being
here,
Jeff.
And everything tastes better in that mug.
Very true. You can get it in a mug. You can get it in a large mug. You can get it in a beer stein. You can get it in a frosted beer mug. Whatever you want. Go for it. Zazzle.com/JGamet. Of course, Adam Christensen can be found at the MacCast, MacCast.com, Twitter.com/MacCast, and member.MacCast.com.
Yeah. I just went through on the member show how you can do some cool stuff with Safari's develop menu.
Ooh.
So if you've ever wondered what's going on in there, kind of run through some of the cooler features that are more universal, more that apply to everybody, doing cool stuff like changing your user agent.
That is a very handy feature.
Nice.
So if you don't know what that means, check out the latest member show.
Yeah, member.matcast.com. And of course, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston is my actual personal Twitter, and you can follow that if you want to, and send me at replies when the show doesn't go up, or if you have any questions or comments or anything like that, feel free. twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. Of course, I have the Lil Reviews account as well. twitter.com/LILReviews, and I do little reviews of various things. I will probably review the space shuttle launching, and spoiler alert, I'll probably say it was awesome.
How many times do you get to use that review?
How many what?
How many times do you get to use the review, it was awesome?
Well, since I make the rules, I can do it as many times as I want. I mean, that's the point of having a little review. It was awesome or it sucked is pretty much all you need to know. So yeah.
I thought the review might be, whoa.
Whoa, dude. Whoa. Yeah. So with that, we will see you next week, or maybe a few days after, a week from now. We'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? A stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?